You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, we're talking about bullying and vis-a-vis children's rights at school. And of course, bullying at schools is a systemic problem that affects so many learners at schools. Students who are bullied often feel threatened and powerless. While bullying can be destructive and persistent, it can also be subtle enough that teachers are not aware of it. And so what does the law actually say about it? So we're going to be having that conversation today. And I do hope that if you're listening out there, but do make sure that you also have your contribution, and let's hear what your thoughts around this. So, Mr. Sibanda, what is the primary legal framework addressing bullyings in South African schools?
Thank you very much, Zama, for the question. And you have laid it down very, very well, in the sense that so in the advent of social media, it is persistently growing. We see incidents of cyberbullying. We see incidents of, the prevalence is actually very, very large at this point in time. What tends to happen is that often when we are dealing with the situation of a school, it is who are involved in this situation.
Yeah.
Critical analysis of the legislation that involves minors. One must take an analysis of the intersection between the various legislation that is available for incidents of violence, incidents of harassment, as well as incidents of bullying. Now, there are, in a school context, there are four primary pieces of legislation that one has to take into account. One being the Protection from Harassment Act of Act Number 71 of 2011, the Children's Justice Act 75 of 2008, and the Children's Act 38 of 2005, as well as the South African Schools Act 84 of 1996. Now, what we need to ask ourselves firstly is we need to understand what is bullying, right? A person is said to be bullied, for instance, where a person is exposed to repeated and over a certain period, negative actions on the part of one or more person, and that particular person who's exposed to this action has a difficulty defending themselves. There are three main elements that come out of the definition of bullying. And one, bullying is a form of aggressive behavior, right? And it manifests in a situation where the bully acts out and behaves in a negative manner. Now, the second element is that bullying forms a behavioral pattern over time. And then finally, there is always an imbalance of power in a situation where bullying is of effect. Now, we understand that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. So it must always be borne in mind that any violation or any situation of bullying may violate a number of constitutional rights, a number of rights that are enshrined in the Constitution. And I'll list a few. For instance, it is the right to equality that is affected, the right to human dignity, the right to freedom and security of a person, the right to privacy, and the right not to be exposed to violence, torture, and cruel inhuman treatment, which is enshrined in Section 12 of the Constitution. Now, Section 12 of the Constitution does not only protect the physical integrity of an individual, but it also protects the psychological well-being of that person, especially learners. Now, learners are afforded the very same constitutional protection against verbal abuse, bullying, verbally, social exclusion, and all forms of non-physical bullying. Section 28 of the Constitution. And additional constitutional protection to children, particularly. Section 28, 1D, it states that children have a right to be protected against maltreatment, neglect, abuse, and degradation. And I'm sure you've heard about this principle, the principle, the paramountcy principle, where there are decisions that are made about a child, the child's best interests are of paramount importance. Now, against this backdrop, obviously there's the issue of the right to education, which will be affected in the instances of bullying. At times, when a person is bullied or when a child is bullied, they end up not going to school or not wanting to go to school. And obviously that adversely affects the learner's academic performance. Now, having looked at the provisions of the Constitution, when we start looking and analyzing the legislative framework that deals with the schools in particular, it must subject itself to the constitutional framework that we have now spoken about above. I've outlined the four pieces of legislation that we have spoken about. We'll start off, obviously, with the Protection from Harassment Act. The primary legislation in relation to bullying is this particular piece of legislation, which is the Protection from Harassment Act, and it contains a detailed definition of what harassment is. I will read. The elements of harassment in A, Section 1A says it is conduct aimed at causing harm or the belief that harm is imminent through following or watching a victim at his or her home or place of study, communicating with the victim through verbal, written, or electronic media, or sending letters, emails, or other objects to the victim. The said conduct can also be or can also amount to sexual harassment. Then we move on to the second piece of legislation, which is the South African Schools Act. In short, it's referred to as the SASA Act. Section 8(1) of that particular piece of legislation provides that a with the various role players, the code of conduct must comprise a set of which set the standards of the learner's behavior and encourages self discipline and mutual respect. Now, Section 8(5) also outlines the positive behavior, but it also indicates how a misbehavior must be dealt with. So how we deal with bullying and the code of conduct is dealt with in Section 8 of the South African Schools Act. Now, Zama, when you and I went to school, I'm sure you went to school back then. We had initiation practicing. Right? We were initiated when we went to school. I went to a boys' boarding school, and we were initiated. And you actually realize that The initiation process in itself was bullying disguised as an initiation practice. Now, the SASSA Act prohibits this practice of initiation. Though it does not explicitly mention the bullying, the elements of bullying are specifically proscribed in Section 10A of the SASSA Act, and it lists a number of elements of bullying. It says that the endangerment of mental or physical well-being, undermining human dignity, humiliation, undermining the right. The rights as set out in the Bill of Rights, or the destruction of private property. Now, schools themselves, if they are aware of bullying incidents and they do not take action, they expose the state, Alozama, sorry,
yes,
they expose the state to liability. Now, for damages. So in terms of Section 60 of the SASSA Act, it provides that the schools can be held liable for damage or loss or injury incurred by a learner through the activities of the private school. So in other words, if schools are aware of bullying incidents, they must intervene. Should they fail to intervene, they will be held liable. Government will be held liable for those public schools, and they'll be liable for damages. And then we move on to the third piece of legislation, which is the Children's Act. The objective of this particular piece of legislation is to give effect to the constitutional rights of children. So in this case, it must neglect, and it must promote the best interest of the children. Section 14 of the Children's Act, it provides that every child must be provided with the right to bring and to be assisted in bringing a matter to court. So, cannot bring a matter to court. They must be assisted by an adult. If an adult is not there, they must be assisted. And usually what we call a curator is appointed to assist the child. Now, we then move on to the fourth piece of legislation, which is the Child Justice Act, which emphasizes restorative justice as opposed to punitive justice in instances where a child is the perpetrator of such criminal activities or bullying activities. It aims to rectify the injustices and to rehabilitate that particular offender. Who are we talking about when we are talking about children? The Act, the Child Justice Act, defines certain classes of children. It defines them in three classes, but I'll start off with the issues of age.
Okay, all right.
Age is a very crucial factor when we're dealing with delictual accountability. Generally, a child under the age of 7 is referred to as an infant and is regarded in Latin as a doli et culpae in capax. In other words, they cannot be held liable based on fault.
Oh, okay. Regardless of that they are aware of their actions?
Regardless of that they are aware of their actions, a child under the age of 7 is said to be cannot be held liable for their actions based on fault.
I see.
If you walk into a shop, for instance, with your 5-6 year old, and they pick up a box of chocolate and they walk out with it, they cannot be held liable for that because they are said to be an infant, and therefore they are not liable. They cannot be at fault.
I see. Okay.
Right. There is a rebuttable presumption, however, in relation to minors who are aged between 7 and 12 for girls and 7 and 14 for boys in relation to their unlawful acts.
Okay.
Earlier, I was talking about, in terms of the Child Justice Act, the three categories of the ages that it distinguishes between. It distinguishes between a child below the age of 10 years of age, children who are 10 years and older but younger than 18, and then young people who are aged 18. Of 21. So those are the particular ages that the Child Justice Act distinguishes between. A child who is 10 years and older, but under the age of 14, is presumed to be dolai in KPAX. However, there's also, unless if that child is found out, he or she can be blamed or can be held liable criminally. Generally, the presumption is that they are not capable of being held criminally liable unless, beyond reasonable doubt, it is held that that child has the necessary criminal capacity. A child over the age of 14 is presumed to have full criminal capacity. In other words, that child, if they do commit a crime, they are held liable criminally. They have full criminal capacity.
What age is that?
In Section 9(1) of the Child Justice Act, it holds that where a child is under the age of 10 but commits an offense, such a child must not be arrested, but must be handed over to their child, their parent or guardian, or is not found, they are handed over to a child or youth care center. And this is obviously upon taking the necessary steps.
Hello, Sindiso.
Yes, Sam, I'm here.
Yes, all right. No, I had just lost you there. This, you said this was apart from taking the necessary steps.
Once the necessary steps have been taken with the probation officer, and that probation officer has made the decision that the child must be handed over to a parent or guardian or a youth care center.
I see. Well, Sindiso, man, there's a lot to talk about, but our time is far spent. So I suggest that we maybe do a continuation, but this time next week, I'll speak to the producer so that we can actually allocate the time, if that is fine with you.
That will be fine with me. I'm available, Zama. I'll be available next week, and we can recap on our topic.
Lovely. Sindiso, thank you so much for your time, man.
Adventist World Radio, SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.